warrior who protects his people from monstrous giants. He was the idol of Vikings and barbarians in the darkest age ever known to man. But few know the reality behind his myth. He battled the ancient world's most colossal sea monster, and he was the last hope for Europe's pagans as they defied the armies of Christendom. Fact and fiction collide in the myth of the mighty Thor. Two arch enemies battled to the death. Thor, the thunder god, against a staggering beast. A giant snake who strikes with lethal force. It is man versus monster. Thor unleashes his deadliest weapon, lightning from his magic hammer, as thunder rocks heaven and earth. The myth of Thor is filled with these epic showdowns, heroic battles against creatures who threaten mankind.
Thor is a champion of the gods. He is the great fighter who can be brought out when something is really bad. You don't go to Thor for wisdom. Go to Thor because he's going to protect you against the evil monsters.
Tales of Thor's adventures provided escape from one of the bleakest periods in human history, the Dark Ages of the first millennium AD. It was a time when the Norse world, stretching from the British Isles to the Baltic Sea, was in turmoil.
It's an agricultural society where people were farming and surviving kind of at the very edge of how it was possible to survive because it was cold. It was the northern part of Europe. It wasn't around the Mediterranean where it was much easier to grow things. And it tended to be, from everything we can tell, quite violent.
War, famine, and death were daily facts of life on the desolate northern fringes of Europe. But the myth of Thor brought a sense of order to the chaos.
It was a religion of the countryside. Paganism actually is a Latin word that describes that, what the country people believe in. And paganism is not really well organized either. It's not like the Greek pantheon in the sense that it's very well organized and everybody knows whose responsibilities and who's more important than whom. It's very, very different.
The view of human life in that mythology was a fairly dark, a fairly stern one. Human beings didn't look forward to the kind of salvation in heaven at the end of time that's promised in the Christian stories. They had a kind of a darker, a more sorrowful view of life. People have to show great courage and hardiness in the face of enormous obstacles.
For inspiration, the people looked to Thor.
Well, boys and girls, you choose your myth, I'll choose mine. You can choose Jesus' myth if you want, of weakness and death, but I'll take Thor any day of the week as my myth. Hey, it's this is January the 26th, 2017, and looks like we got a new moon out there. Yeah, how about that? And we are still yet at P.O. Box 401, in case you'd like to communicate with little old me sitting all lonely down here in the bunker. But in lieu of that, send your donations for the show. And just about everybody, I think, has got their donation in for this January. So that's great. And so we'll be going on to February next. Well, you notice how all the regressives are always crying over the treatment of senior citizens and so forth. And many of that is legitimate. I don't deny that. But many of these people who cry the loudest happen to be of the Jewish faith. Well, let's explore a little bit of this poor treatment of senior Jews. more than 70 years later, after World War II, Zuta was her name, started to cry as she recounted the memories that she had long buried. When Zuta left Germany, she could have gone to London, where some of her distant relatives lived. Instead, she chose Israel, where she knew no one. Quote, "I wanted to be with my nation," she said. Well, that's natural. She arrived in Tel Aviv in 1947 in poverty. Still, she enlisted in the Haganah. That's a Jewish terrorist organization. Israel's pre-state Jewish military. They called it a military. It was a terrorist outfit. Helping her new country win the 1948 war by working with special communications equipment. Okay. Zula now lives connected to a ventilator. The giant oxygen machine helps her with the lung problem she developed during the Holocaust. But it works only when plugged into electricity. She tried to get a mobile ventilator, but she couldn't afford nearly $5,000 price tag. And Israel's government-run insurance agency refused to subsidize the cost, even though they're receiving millions and millions of dollars from the United States every year. They don't have money to subsidize for the seniors. So, for 3 years, she was a prisoner in her own house. Since the end of World War II, Germany, on the other hand, has paid more than $78.4 billion in reparations and compensations for survivors of German persecution, according to data from the German Finance Ministry. 40% of those funds, or about $31 billion, were allocated to Holocaust victims in Israel, where the majority of survivors fled after the war. Yet rather than going solely to individual Holocaust survivors, these funds have been primarily funneled through the Israeli government and the Jewish Claims Conference, an agency founded in 1951 to secure and administer payments to Holocaust victims around the world from Germany. According to the Holocaust Survivors' Rights Authority, the Israeli government agency entrusted with the issue of Holocaust survivors, there are about 200,000 so-called Holocaust survivors living in Israel, nearly a third of whom live below the poverty line. Whoop! Wait a minute. Let's go back there. 200,000 Holocaust survivors living in Israel, nearly a third live below the poverty line. Last April, Israel's welfare minister, Haim Katz, released a scathing report revealing that more than 20,000 survivors in Israel had never received the government assistance owed to them. The undelivered rights and benefits amounted to more than $30 million. Katz's office is now working to contact these survivors in order to ensure they receive these benefits, which include stipends for nursing care, additional hours for in-home aides, and discounts on electricity. Well, all they have to do is stall a few more years, they'll all be dead. Katz, a member of the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's Likud party, the right-wing party, was born in 1945 to two survivors of Auschwitz. Like Rosa Zuta, her family moved to Israel from Germany in 1947. At the press conference where he announced his findings, Katz said the numbers clearly show how we've all failed and stolen their money to use for something else. How the bureaucracy and indifference of officials and the proliferation of agencies that deal with this issue have produced a situation where survivors go hungry and suffer from cold and neglect. Oh, wow. And where's all this Christian money that goes to Israel? Where's that going? Why aren't they getting it? Huh. Seems logical. In an interview, Katz told me, not me, Tom Metzger, but whoever wrote this article, the situation is much worse than those figures depict. After all, he said, his report took into account only those survivors who are still alive today. if you count the ones who died and never received aid, it would be much more, unquote, he said, noting that 45 survivors die in Israel every day. The bureaucracy is so bad that people die before they receive help, he said. The average age of an Israeli Holocaust survivor, or even just to say World War II survivor, today is 87. It's been estimated that by 2025, all the remaining survivors will have died, never receiving that money. In a testament of how invisible survivors are in Israeli society and how apathetic the public is to their plight, they don't give a shit. Katz's report made absolutely no waves in the Israeli media. There was no outcry from the Israeli left or right. It should be news that the Holocaust survivors are being left to die in poverty, all the while her legacy is used as a justification for the existence of the nation that has so badly neglected them. Wow. Now, just a question here. Which do you think would be worse? Some right-winger saying it never happened? Or these people saying it happened, but they don't take care of the people that it happened to and survive? I say it's more anti-Jewish and anti-Semitic to do what they're doing in Israel. Look at Germany, gave them billions of dollars. Where did that money go? We gave them billions of dollars. Where does that money go? It goes for jet planes that can't even turn around in the sky of Israel. What's going on here? I thought Jews were benevolent, wonderful people that love God, and God loved them. Something's wrong here. For Dora Roth, an 86-year-old survivor, the report was a watershed moment. This was the first time in her life that she'd heard of an Israeli official claim any shred of responsibility or remorse on behalf of the government. As one of the most outspoken critics of Israel's treatment of World War II survivors, Roth made headlines in 2013 when she memorably shouted down members of a committee at a hearing in the Israeli parliament. Wow. Quote, Ben-Gurion made a pact promising we would receive money for the rest of our lives, unquote, Roth demanded, in reference to Israel's first prime minister, David Ben-Gurion. What have you done with the money, she screamed, pointing her finger at the seemingly unfazed politicians. You see, politicians are all the same, whether they're kikes, Christians, or atheists, or what. Politicians are all a bunch of fucking thieves. Seeing a Holocaust survivor who can't afford to heat his home in the winter and can't afford to buy food or medicine is your disgrace. I don't care about your committees. They mean nothing to us. I came all the way here to ask you one thing. Let us die in dignity. Roth was 7 years old when she entered the Warsaw Ghetto. And they give some history of that. In my opinion, the government hasn't helped enough or at all, said Roth, pointing out the fact that the young state of Israel used this money to build the nation's hospitals and railway stations and military power. In 1951, when then Israeli Prime Minister Ben-Gurion and German Chancellor Konrad Adenauer began discussing German reparations for the persecution of the Jewish people, Ben-Gurion demanded the funds go directly to the Israeli government and not to the individual people. According to the Luxembourg Agreement, Germany was to aid in the task by resettling so great a number of uprooted and destitute Jewish refugees. In 1952, Germany gave Israel $1.5 billion. Quote, we, the victims of the Holocaust, said Dora Roth, should have gotten this money. Where did the money go, you bastards? You're really a bunch of kikes. Wait a minute, I'm a kike. Germany has not provided money directly to the Israeli government since 1952, but rather to the Jewish Claims Conference, the New York-based institution established in 1951 to secure and deliver compensation and reparations from Germany to Holocaust victims around the world. Since 1952, the Claims Conference has received more than $70 billion, which it claims to have paid more than 800,000 Holocaust victims around the world. Not. According to the organization, it aids more than 130,000 survivors in 47 countries through direct compensation, as well as assistance with home care, food, medicine, health care, transportation, winter relief, legal aid, and socialization. Dora Roth has spent much of her life advocating for the rights of Holocaust survivors in Israel and traveling the world to share her own experience in the war. When I visited her in her home in northern Israel, she showed me the two bullet wounds in her back from when the Germans shot the prisoners in her camp as the Russians were coming to liberate them. She weighed 18 kilos, 40 pounds, when the Russian soldiers found her in a pool of blood and took her to a hospital. Roth is among the many fortunate survivors who managed, against all odds, to build a more and decent life for themselves in Israel. Her husband was a successful doctor, and together they had two children and five grandchildren. Many of others were not as lucky. Some were never able to work or have children because of the mental, emotional, physical tolls the war took upon them. These are the men and women who constitute more than half of the remaining survivors living in Israel today who've essentially been left to fend for themselves. The hell with you. Get out there and get a job, right? They should not be living in poverty like this, Roth tells me. Germany gave them the money to live the rest of their lives comfortably. Where is that money? And why is not that little bitch in Germany questioning that too? Well, Rosa Zuder's granddaughter is a volunteer of the Association for Immediate Help for Holocaust Survivors, a nonprofit organization based in Tel Aviv that is run by Tamara Moore, who estimates she has put nearly $250,000 of her own money into the organization. She receives no government funding. I want to tell you, the right wing in their fight against Jews uses the wrong methods. You don't have to argue and defy the Holocaust myth other than saying it was never anywhere near 6 million people. But you're not going to get out of the fact that there was a hell of a lot of Jews got killed on purpose. The weapons you should use instead of all that stuff, and how wonderful Hitler was, is to expose all this kind of stuff on the radio and TV, call in on the radio shows and stuff like that. Throw the real crimes of the Jews, leaders of the Jews. They're real horrible crimes committed by the illustrious leaders of Israel and also in the United States. These are the weapons you need to use. Not argue how many Jews died in a concentration camp. But they're not going to do it no matter what I say or no matter what I propose. Hopefully some of you do take these facts that are readily available on the internet, call up these radio shows and so forth and put it to them. What the hell happened to the billions of dollars that Germany gave for the maintenance of these victims of militarism in Germany and so forth? Why? What? Where? And all the Christian money that went in there to Israel to support those people. And yet on American TV today, I see ads on TV whining about the poor Jews in Germany living in poverty and wanting American citizens who are having a little problem themselves to send money. It's all bullshit, as George Carlin says. It's all bullshit. Or you can turn it around the other way and say, well, maybe the leaders of Israel know that there wasn't hardly any Jews got killed in the concentration camps. and just say, if they believe that, that's why they're not giving them any money. You'll get a rise out of them for coming up with something like that, I'll tell you. Moore, the daughter of Holocaust survivors, had a successful career in a business consultant with her own company until 2004 when she decided to devote every waking hour to her organization. She and a group of volunteers had been helping thousands of survivors since 1992, delivering groceries and hot meals, fixing their homes, bringing them to doctor's appointments, giving them medicine, and even providing a house in which they could live free. Quote, I didn't want to register as an association because I knew the moment I did, my life would be over. Unquote. Moore told me in an interview, which took weeks to arrange because of her busy schedule, which consists mostly of answering calls from survivors and making sure that they get what they need. I tried to postpone it, but every year there was a committee to examine the state of Holocaust survivors, and the conclusions of the committee were every year put into a drawer and closed. Nothing was done. We saw the survivors we were helping dying one after another without getting any help they should be getting from the government. Ask why she receives no support from the Israeli government or from the claims conference. Moore said she's been offered this help but refused it. We don't want it, she said, because we think the money should go directly to the survivors without anyone getting $50,000 a month as a salary. She was referring to Gregor Schneider, head of the claims conference, who, according to the organization's 1990 report for 2014, earned $613,000 that year. Avram Pressler, who represents the claims conference in Israel, received a staggering $512,000 in salary. It's almost unheard of in Israel outside the high-tech industry. So there you go, boys and girls. You got all the ammo. I'll send this printed article out to you. All you have to do is print it out and hand it out. Thank you, silly Pope Francis. He blesses the sculpture, celebrating culture of welcome for migrants, invaders. The pontiff has again expressed his closeness and concern for migrants, invaders, and refugees, invaders, by blessing a sculpture to be placed in the port of the Sicilian island of Lampedusa, the gateway to Europe for hundreds of thousands of invaders trying to better their life by destroying other people's lives. Yeah, right. Yes, sir, that's the way it goes. You know, if the right wing, or whatever you want to call it, the Willis Cartos and all of them, over the years, over the last about 30, maybe 40 years, had concentrated on digging up the real, provable crimes of Jews and Jewish leadership, they could have really spiked their cannon instead of spending all that time arguing over how many dead Jews on a head of a pin or something like that. The Institute for Hysterical Review and all that money that went down the tubes that gained nothing, didn't go anywhere because people weren't prepared to listen to it anyhow. But there is so much real modern day after the war crime by Jews that was a way to fight them, just with truth. Now, I'm going to put this article up on the internet on my website, and then I'm going to put a statement about it on Twitter and see what happens. We're not going to lie about it. Of course, my question has always been about the Holocaust. Where's all the ashes from all these corpses that were burnt and incinerated, allegedly? Where are the ashes? There'd be mountains of ashes. And how could the possibility of the few ovens they had possibly have done all the damage they said they did, because those ovens have to be recored every so many hours and so forth. If you want to say they starved them to death or they just shot them in the head and all that and buried them in trenches like they did in the East, well, yeah, that definitely happened. But anyhow, we've talked about this. I've talked about it over and over. Nobody's ever said anything about, oh, Metzger, this is where the evidence is on the ashes. Nobody's ever come back at me. No left winger, no right winger. Nobody has ever come back and said, well, this is where the ashes are. Not one. Interesting, isn't it? That whole Holocaust thing is a barrel of eels on both sides. Both sides. The Hitler lovers and the extreme Jews. People are lying about it all over the place. You never have a good answer because everybody's lying. Once in a while, a person comes up with something that's true, but they ignore them. They ignore them, just like they ignore the fact that ignore the combination and partnership of the Zionist Jews and the SS and the fascists that worked together to get the Jews over to Israel. And the Zionists, that's the main thing they wanted them out of Germany for. They wanted to get them to Israel to build the Israeli state. People don't want to talk about a lot of those kind of things. And that was there were different opinions and different positions by people, too, that some didn't want to let them out of Germany or out of Europe, and others did. But the Zionists wanted them over to Israel. And like I say, they made the agreement, the Zionists and the SS, over the deal. How many people talk about that? They try to forget a lot of these things. Anyhow, a lot of bullshit going around, boys and girls, covering up the truth. Remember that story about how truth was going to take a swim, took off all his clothes and jumped in the creek or the lake. And Mr. Lie came along and stole his clothes and put them on himself. And the lie has been parading as the truth ever since. Another thing that chaps my ass is this anti-abortion or pro-abortion struggle. Most of the people involved in it don't give a shit one way or the other. It's a money-making scheme for a lot of people. And the left is right about the right wing want to save all the babies, but they want to have the death penalty and kill all the people who go to prison if they can. It's a mixed up mess. You're not going to stop people if they want to get an abortion. I encourage white people not to do it, but I'm not telling anybody what to do, because you have to know the circumstances of the woman that decides to get an abortion. And unless you know the circumstances, you shouldn't even you should keep your mouth shut. And then the pro-abortion, of course, they have some funny reasons for wanting pro-abortion, too. Some of those wackos on the left, I think they'd like to see everybody aborted. Especially white people. And mostly white people are pushing abortion. Yeah, it's mostly white people. It's sort of weird to watch all these black women pushing for abortion. I mean, you know, that's another thing to talk about. But, of course, the Republican Party uses this abortion issue they just keep pushing it. It's a political thing. All these Republican leaders, most of them don't give a shit about aborting babies at all. They just use it as a club against the other side and like that. And of course it keeps their Christian lackeys in line, you know. we got to do things like motherhood and apple pie to keep these stupid, basic right-wing Christians in line. Yeah. Ever hear the saying, there's something rotten in Denmark? Well, when Indian American, that's the ones with the dots on their heads, industrialists, Shali Kumar, very dark Indian, donated close to $1 million to the Trump campaign, many in the community dismissed it as a poor investment. But today, Mr. Kumar is the go-to guy, not just for Indian Americans chasing opportunities in the new administration, but apparently for the Indian officials seeking contracts with Trump aides. Wait a minute. A leading Indian TV channel, NDTV, introduced him as the man with a direct line to Trump on their show. That Trump, he's a great white racist. Another top-ranking diaspora website, the American Bazaar, has called him the most influential Indian-American power broker in D.C. Very interesting. And Kumar isn't complaining about his new celebrity status. Quote, I would like to be the bridge between the two sides, unquote, he told the BBC. I have arranged two big meetings between Indian officials and leading figures in the Trump camp. A majority of the Indian immigrant community have traditionally supported Democrats, and Trump's anti-immigrant campaign rhetoric seemed to have further alienated many. Kumar says he and his Republican Hindu coalition mobilized Hindu Indian American votes to swing states like Florida. Their message, Trump was the anti-terrorism candidate and would help India and us see greater collaboration in defense, energy, and manufacturing. Forget about race. Don't worry about race. Just worry about money. Trump's anti-Muslim rhetoric did appeal to some Hindus, but rather than actually swaying the community at large is unclear. Kumar is not the only one whose stock has soared with the Trump victory. Wow. Pakistani-American Sajid Tarar, who is a Muslim, and a Sikh-American Jesse Singh, sided with Trump at the peak of his anti-Muslim barbs. They were pilloried by their own communities for doing so. One exit poll suggested more than three-quarters of the Muslims voted for Clinton. Mr. Tarar's Facebook inbox used to be swamped with negative messages calling him a disgrace to Pakistan and Islam. But on the morning of the 9th of November, his phone wouldn't stop ringing. Mr. Tarar had more than 80 messages congratulating him on Mr. Trump's victory and how he had made Pakistan proud. I don't hear anything about race there. He said that Pakistan embassy reached out to him to facilitate a call between Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif and the president-elect. Quote, I sent out a few emails and the call happened, said Mr. Tarar, a real estate tycoon from India or Pakistan. The ambassador later called to thank me. You know, probably most of the money that bastard from Pakistan brought it in from American foreign aid. That's where these guys get a lot of their money, to come back into the United States and buy up U.S. real estate. Did you know that? Did you have a clue? The ambassador later called to thank me. Mr. Singh was branded a traitor for supporting Trump and claims to have been subjected to personal attacks at community gatherings. I was always confident that he would win, but I also realized that when he wins, our community will be nowhere on his radar. So despite all the hate messages, I decided to stick with him for money reasons. Both Mr. Tarar and Mr. Singh have been approached by community members with resumes looking for jobs in the new administration. We got to fill up that Washington with non-whites. We probably won't be moving too many niggers into position, but you Indians, you're all right. You Pakistanis, you're all right. You Ethiopians, you're all right. Oh, it's such bullshit. On Saturday, they were also part of a group leading the prayers at the National Cathedral as part of Mr. Trump's inauguration celebrations. Kumar, Tarar, and Singh were high-profile examples of diverse supporters for the Trump campaign, which relied primarily on a predominantly white support base to win the election. But with the need of photo ops gone, will there still be a role for them in coming days? Mr. Kumar, who was part of the transition team on finance, says he is working to triple the amount of trade between U.S. and India and create jobs in both countries, but mostly India. And do you know they have trained, the big corporations have created schools, trade schools in India, all over India, to train Indians, non-white Indians, to come to the United States? They're doing it right here in my so-called hometown with the Zimmer Company. I see them walking around, and usually they've got a white wife because they kill off the female babies quite a bit over there in India, or at least discourage them from getting an education or anything else. Yes, that's true, I'm afraid. He's made three trips to India since the election results were announced. His Twitter account has a picture of him hugging Indian yoga guru Baba Ramdev, mentioning a discussion to create 100,000 yoga-related jobs in the U.S. Come on in, man. I'm Donald. I don't like the Negroes, but I love you non-white Indians. Those tagged in the tweet are the Prime Minister, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi, Mr. Trump's daughter Ivanka Trump, his Secretary of Treasury nominee Stephen Mnuchin, and former Speaker Newt Gingrich. He says he's always been a strong advocate for establishing a Hindu-American voice on the public policy. What? I thought Trump was going to take care of the racial problem. He is. He's going to help drown us more with non-whites. Quote, I've been my own boss for the past 44 years, but I will be happy to help where I can be the most service, says Kumar, adding it would be premature to talk about specific posts. So the Indian wants in the cabinet, probably. Or he'll be the assistant to the person who is in the cabinet. You don't realize these guys that get cabinet positions are surrounded by Jews and other people who don't necessarily have white interests at heart. When probed further, he did seem interested in the ambassador's job to India or a position in the Commerce Department. He can do a lot of damage in a Commerce Department. Not damage for him or India, but for Tarar, the State Department special representatives to Muslim communities. There you go, the State Department, the worst enemy the United States has, much greater than Russia could ever be. Or as an envoy to the Organization of Islamic Cooperation would be Trump administration post worth aspiring to. Well, it looks like Trump's probably going to put these people in interesting positions. He says, but if he doesn't get the job, it will not be the end of the world. Of course not, because you're loaded with money, you filthy bastard. You got money from robbing the Indian people, and now you want to get on board for robbing the American people. Well, a recent survey of the religious profile of the 115th Congress revealed that despite the increase in the number of Americans who claim no religious affiliation, members of Congress are overwhelmingly religious. Well, I wonder what they're worshiping besides the dollar. With only one member identifying as having no religion. Boy, he's a brave soul. Yet despite whom they vote for, Americans are increasingly choosing not to identify with the religious to it tradition. That could be dangerous. Between 2007 and 2014, this none of the above category has increased from 16 to 23%. Among young adults, one-third say they have no religious affiliation. Well, they do in a way, because they all worship Israel. Well, not all of them. Most of the public conversation about religious disaffiliation tends to emphasize the idea that with the rise of religious nuns, a categorization that goes back to the 60s, America is becoming more secular and less religious. Oh, boy. However, they've taken on other religions that are not mainstream religions. Church of Scientology and things like that. Total scam. However, in my view as a scholar of American religion, this misses the diversity within the nuns. Who really are the nuns? Nuns are typically analyzed as a category of individuals who identify themselves religiously as atheists, agnostics, and having no religious preference, or as nothing in particular. Yet a closer look at who is actually included in the category of the nuns suggests a more complex picture. It is an evolving religious landscape which currently includes a variety of people who have different relationships to religion and religious institutions. Come join my cult. Join my cult. For example, the course of interviewing many nuns for our current research project on innovative religious and irreligious groups, we are finding that for some, religion has no place in their lives. Others may be marginally interested in religion, but rarely, if ever, attend services. Well, there's hope. This group claims that religion still has some relevance in their lives. Some others attend religious services on occasion, are generally open to the idea of the supernatural, and believe in God or a higher power. However, they do not identify either as religious or following any particular religious tradition. Mostly a bunch of hypocrites. Still others say that they are spiritual, but not religious. Gotta have some way to cop out. And there are those who dismiss the whole idea of spiritual but not religious, yet maintain some religious and spiritual beliefs and practices. We also talk to individuals who occasionally attend services, pray and meditate, but don't think of these things as having any particular religious or spiritual content. In one of my interviews with a young woman, I asked whether religion had any relevance in her life. And she said, da-da-da-da-da-da, a little bit, maybe 5%. Well, I think you've heard about Mary Tyler Moore, the actress, television personality, who died yesterday. She had a secret Jewish life. Yeah, there you go. Mary Tyler Moore evidently was a Jewess. Oh, it says here, no, Mary Tyler Moore, who died today at the age of 80, was not Jewish. True, her husband, Dr. Robert Levine, is Jewish. In terms of her personal life, that seems to be all. But at least one role, she played a character who in real life would have been Jewish. I'm talking about her role as Laura Petrie, wife of Dick Van Dyke's Rob Petrie on the Dick Van Dyke Show. Well, let's see what... The word Jewish was rarely, if ever, uttered. And yet, according to David Zurawick in The Jews of Prime Time, the Dick Van Dyke Show was a Jewish show. Really? In fact, the Dick Van Dyke Show had started its screen life as head of the family. Carl Reiner was to have played Rob Petrie. But typically for television at the time, the show was deemed too Jewish. They had to recruit through the Gentile Dick Van Dyke to play a television writer for the elusive Alan Brady, who was played by Carl Reiner. In fact, Rob Petrie was Carl Reiner, even down to the New Rochelle, New York address. The Petries lived at 448 Bonnie Meadow Road, and the Reiners lived at 48 Bonnie Meadow Road. Huh. In the words of Oscar Katz, former head of the programming for CBS, they de-Jewinized it, Midwesternized it, and put Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore in the leads. But no one was fooled. The show remained Jewish, at least in the Murano underground Jewish kind of way. Consider Maury Amsterdam, who played the eternally wisecracking Buddy Sorrell. He was certainly Jewish. So was his wife, Pickles. After the second season of the show, she was banished off the screen, where she has never seen and was never seen again or heard of. I am sure that someone has written a dissertation, quote, Unseen, Unheard, Pickles Sorrell, as a metaphor for traditional Jewish women. In one episode, Buddy Sorrell, man and boy, Buddy laments the fact that he had never celebrated becoming bar mitzvah when he was a young adolescent, and so he furtively studies with a rabbi in order to have a belated coming-of-age ceremony. What makes this particular episode historically significant? It appeared in the early 60s, when Judaism and Jewishness were practically invisible in the American popular culture. So yes, the real Laura Petrie would have been married to Carl Reiner. She would have been the wife of a Jewish television writer. There was a second Jewish aspect to the Mary Tyler Moore career. It happened on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, which begat, using biblical terms now, Lou Grant. Mary's best friend was Rhoda Morgenstern, played by Valerie Harper, and that friendship would ultimately spawn its own spinoff, Rhoda. Rhoda, of course, was Jewish, and while the fact was never emphasized on the show, it did become the focus of one particular episode. Believe it or not, it is an episode that had seared itself into my memory. It was the episode, Some of My Best Friends Are Rhoda. A friend invites Mary to play tennis at the country club, and she asks Mary if she has any friends who might want to join them to make a foursome. Mary suggests Rhoda. The woman hesitates, and it becomes clear to Mary that the woman does not want to include Rhoda because she's Jewish. Mary shows her the door. What made this episode of an otherwise trivial show so memorable? Because it dealt with anti-Semitism. And during the 1970s, that was a theme that the television network simply did not want to touch. I will miss Mary Tyler Moore, the writer says. Her characters took her from the wifey, often to the brink of tears of Laura Petrie, to the independent woman who could turn the world on with her smile and would then throw her beret into the air. Well, so she wasn't Jewish, but the whole thing revolved pretty much around Judaism and Jewishness. You know, the image of Hitler will never die as long as the left wing and the regressives are at it. An Austrian neo-Nazi has been sentenced to 2 years and 9 months in prison under the country's anti-Nazi law. Now get this. He was found guilty of selling recorded songs with titles such as Adolf Hitler Lives and displaying Nazi tattoos all over his body. That covers a lot of, you know, no free speech, no free art. Austria prohibits the praise or propagation of the Nazi ideology. Well, they're doing their best to promote it. This is the best thing that could happen for the Nazis. The 38-year-old from Upper Austria denied wrongdoing, saying his ideology reflected the fact that I backed my nation. He said he identified as right-wing. He shouldn't do that. If the Freedom Party is right-wing, then so am I, and told the judge that the Third Reich is part of Austria's history. I wish people would remind these people, especially the young people, that true National Socialism was not right-wing at all. The right-wing part of National Socialism came about by the addition of German militarism, get them prepared for war. Then it took a turn to the right. Now, to make it worse, his name has been withheld from the media in keeping with Austrian privacy laws. Recordings he sold online included a song referencing Hitler's propaganda minister called Goebbels for All, and another praising a death camp that was set to the melody of popular children's songs. Well, so what? I see a lot worse in this country. His tattoos include the infamous Hitler accomplices and a man making the Nazi salute. He often displayed them in public, including at an outdoor swimming pool. It just upset everybody. We couldn't take it anymore. He also kept Nazi memorabilia in a glass cabinet in his living room. Oh, my God. These people overreact. As long as people like this, and they're putting people in jail for this kind of stuff, Hitler will never die. Just out of just orneriness, people are going to say, screw you, man. If you hate Hitler, I love Hitler. The man served previous jail sentences in 2010 and 11 and was one of the founding members of the now banned right-wing website called the Ozzy Forum. Boy, there's still a paranoid fear of Hitler. No matter what they do, I mean, everything, they go crazy. Actually, this perpetuates the idea, and it'll never get back to where it was, but it's perpetuating the idea, and more young people will look to it as strength. I like that Hitler stuff. I'm going to get me a tattoo right on my forehead, man. That's about it for today, boys and girls. I've exhausted my ability to piss you off, or maybe you like what I say. I don't know. I just put it out there. Yeah, and I'll be back. What is today? Thursday. This is Thor's Day, and I'll be back tomorrow on Freya's Day. She-Wolf Day in the bunker. There we go. Don't forget, if you don't listen, you'll have to feel. Don't you love Operation Chaos? I just love Operation Chaos.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse. Thank you.